Welcome to the podcast of Grace Covenant Church, where we are transformed by God's grace, connected through relationships, and committed to service.
If you'll turn in your Bibles to John chapter 21, I want to show you a passage of Scripture. It's the last chapter in John's gospel or story of the life of Jesus. Interestingly, Bible scholars, some will debate whether or not John chapter 21 should even be in the Bible because it is an anticlimactic way of ending a story of Jesus. And I don't know how anyone could come to that conclusion, honestly, because the more you know this story, the better you appreciate how it actually ends in this climax, an expression of why Jesus came here in the first place. When I was reading this story, I was reminded of that old nursery rhyme, Humpty Dumpty. Humpty Dumpty sat on a wall. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall. All the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. You guys know that story, right? And I'm sure you probably have thought many times, like I have, how helpful could horses be in putting an egg back together again? But even all the king's men couldn't help either, right? What's the saying? You can't unscramble an egg. Well, Humpty Dumpty thought maybe you could. He was hoping maybe the king's men could, but they couldn't. And I think the bigger question that needs to be asked here, which is actually leading to the story that we'll look into, is why is Humpty Dumpty, an egg person, sitting on a wall in the first place? Right? He's sitting there swinging his legs, underestimating his frailty. That's what he's doing. I mean, I don't know how an egg person ends up on a wall unless they think they're made out of titanium or some sort of unbreakable thing. But that's not the case. And so they end up eventually getting splattered because they had no appreciation of how delicate their life actually is. And so king's horses and certainly and king's men, they don't know what to do with those types of people after they've hit. Well, that's the story of Peter, actually, because when you look at Peter's story here, you'll see that he's in chapter 21, he's broken and needs to be put back together again. Now, Peter understood, like when we started our series, he understood there are two final destinations, ultimately, in our lives. A series of decisions that we all make will lead us to one chair or another. And one chair is despair. Another chair is integrity. A person that makes choices and wishes they wouldn't, again and again and again, end up in a place called regret. And that final chair, there's nothing they can do about it. So they have to die. They have to pass, knowing that they wasted the only life they had. Other people realize that life is short and needs to be kind of seized, and so they make every choice, no matter how hard, to make something out of their life, to give it back to God, to all be to His glory. And so they live with joy. And as they make their transition, they look forward to seeing their Savior and King, to present their life, their only life, to Him as a gift. Well, Peter understood that, okay? He wanted to live a life of integrity. He wanted to live a life of joy. It started, in our story, it started three or more years previous to John chapter 21. And he and his friends, James and John, were fishing on the northern shores of Galilee. And they were, I don't know if it's fishing. They were not fishing. They were attempting to fish. Okay, let's put it that way. And Jesus walks up to them and says from the shore, he says, you know what, guys, you're fishing in too shallow. And with your giant nets, you haven't caught a thing all night long. Why don't you throw your nets a little deeper? And you don't tell many fishermen what to do unless, I guess, they're very desperate. And so they send the nets deeper and they catch quite literally the catch of their lives. The Peter, James, and John Fishing Company, two boats are swamped, and they drag these boats onto shore, and they realize that this man on this that was advising them, career fisherman, was the maker of the fish. And with nets tearing from the weight, Jesus gives them Peter, a new name and a new destiny. He says, Simon, no, not Simon, son of John. I'm going to call you Peter. And I'm going to make you a fisher of men. That's how it all starts, you know. Peter leaving his nets behind. Peter, James, and John. And they left their nets behind. They were absolutely all in. They wanted to live a life of integrity. They wanted to live it all the way to please God. It's Peter that's later on in their life together that was standing in a very scary place in the northern part of Israel, where they are literally at the opening of what people thought were the gates of hell. And Jesus is asking, who do you say that I am? And that's where Peter makes this extremely bold and really courageous in light of the context of where they were standing. He says, no, you're not like these pagan gods. You are the fulfillment of all the promises of the only true God that were whispered to Abraham 2,000 years ago. Peter said that. His confession, Jesus says, that's the right answer. And you didn't just get that on your own. And you're right. I'll give you the keys, and the gates of hell won't even prevail against it. In a very intimate time in the final parts of their lives, in the upper room, they're having this tender-hearted meal. And Jesus kind of turns the mood in a dark way and talks about his soon-to-be death. And Peter, full of pride and unaware of his frailty, says, I will never leave you nor forsake you, you know, till death do us part. And Jesus could not shut him up fast enough, because Peter didn't understand that he was nothing more than an egg man sitting on a wall, swinging his legs out. It would just be a few hours from that moment, and within eyeshot, that Peter would be at Caiaphas' house in a courtyard, and there'd be this charcoal fire going. And I mean, you can literally see the upper room of bravado where Peter had said, I'll never leave you. I'll go to a grave with you. And Peter denies Jesus, ever even knowing Jesus. Not once, not twice, three times. And this rooster crows, and it is like a siren to all the world that Humpty Dumpty has had a great fall. And all the king's horses and all the king's men could not put Peter back together again. And so Peter would wake up. That's where we find Peter now. And Peter would wake up every morning and pledge allegiance to his gloom. He can't be made better, even by his friends. And before we move on to this story, I hope you know that we are all Humpty Dumpty. We're all a Peter. We're all at various times maybe swinging our legs on a wall we should never be on. The human soul is a very fragile thing, and it doesn't take much to break. Nothing gets you falling faster than pride. And decisions can lead you to losing a marriage, a job, some friends, and there are some people that they feel like never make mistakes. They're busy judging other people for being so fragile, which is a mistake. And I want you to see, kind of in the context of Christmas, that this story, John chapter 21, where Peter is going to be put back together again, is the story of Christmas. That's why Jesus came. That's why there's a manger. That's why there's a babe in that food trough. He came to do two things. He came to restore people, to put them back together again, their souls back together to be made well. And and he came to restore and put them back together again with their God. The relationship with God has been broken since the Garden of Eden. And all the king's men could not get us back together, not even David, the great king of old. No one could make us well. The blood of bulls and rams cannot pay the price for a human sin. And so he, Jesus, has to come to put us back together and to put us back together with him. That's what the story of Christmas is all about. And that's why Jesus came, and that's why this story of John chapter 21 is actually the height of this biography of Jesus that John tells about. It's very efficient. I'll kind of go through it. It starts, I want you to listen for how much Jesus goes, to what extent Jesus goes to help Peter remember this moment. I want you to be listening for how he's using every sensory perception and every memory key that is available to him. Because Peter needs to be made well, and he needs to remember that he's being put back together. So Jesus is going to orchestrate things, so it's, you know, just an onslaught of waves of deja vu, so that Peter knows the whole context. Know this, not because it makes for a great story, but because it's supposed to be your story and my story. That Jesus does this for us. It's why he came. And we might be doing this for someone else. Okay? So the story starts in chapter 21, verses 1 through 3 or so, that Peter is frustrated. There's nothing happening in his life. And so he says, look, I'm going to go out fishing. And James and John and Thomas and guys, they said, yeah, we'll go fishing with you. And they fish all night long. And they are absolutely unable to catch a single fish. Not one. And then in verse 4, before I go to verse 4, I want you to see that them going back to fishing is extremely important for you and I. This section right here, verse 4, is the day the universe changes. Because these men who have been following Jesus for 3+ years have come to realize that everything they thought was going to happen did not happen. They were expecting a conquering king like David. They thought that they would, you know, run through the Romans as throw through, you know, just hot butter. And then the Israel would be restored, and ethics and a new system would be, and Zion would be made to rule the world. And while that didn't happen, this is post after the resurrection, while that didn't happen, Jesus died, and then he rose again. That's good and well and all, but Jesus has made just 2 appearances. And they're a little bit spooky at that. He shows up, he makes some things known, and then he leaves. And so everything they've invested in, and they've been in the high, you know, in the kind of the spotlight, following this celebrity for the last 3.5 years, and now there's nothing. And while the other men are not in the emotional and spiritual condition that Peter is in, they're in no man's land. And so Peter says, let's go back fishing. And they said, yeah, let's. And so while they're fishing and they can't catch anything, that's where verse 4, this is where everything changes. And early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore. They don't know it's Jesus, but the disciples did not realize it was him. In verse 5, and he called out to them, friends, haven't you, it's negative, it's a negative question. Hey, you guys haven't caught anything yet, have you? No. Verse 6, he said, well, throw the net on the right side of the boat and you'll find something. And when they did, they were unable to haul in the net because of the large number of fish. And John's going, you know what? This reminds me of the time when, wait a minute, that's Jesus. And John says, that's Jesus. And when John says, that's Jesus, Peter grabs his coat because he'd taken it off just so he'd be, you know, able to help fish. And he jumps out of the boat with his coat on. He's got about 100 yards of swimming to do and swims to shore. And I want you to see that everything slows down at this point. It's Jesus and Peter. And look how the whole kind of the story is introduced in verse 9. And when they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals with fish on it and some bread. Here we go again. They saw a charcoal fire. Peter walks up and he sees this charcoal fire. And John, in his efficiency and his genius in telling a story, he only uses a charcoal fire two times in his whole gospel. Actually, it's the only time it's used in the New Testament. The first time it's used is when they're at Caiaphas' house outside in the courtyard while Jesus is being involved in this kangaroo court. Peter is outside. For the third time, it's by that fire that he denies Jesus. That's the first time charcoal fire is used. The second time charcoal fire is used is right here. And I don't know if you appreciate the power that smell has on your memory, but it is the sense that brings about the most vivid memories back to us. And so Jesus is saying, you know, just kind of blowing some of that smoke into Peter's face and saying, hey, let's have a little trip down memory lane. I think we have some things to talk about. And he has this bread and this fish there, and it's like it's feeding the 5,000 again. Here's the bigger point here, I think, that Jesus is setting this story up so that Peter would not necessarily put at the priority of his memory the Last Supper, but rather the Last Breakfast. That's what he would tell people about. Not the time that he popped off and said how invincible he was, but the time that the king, not his men, but the king showed up to make him well. That's what the story is about. And Jesus is not going to dance around this issue. He's going to come right at Peter and he's going to talk to him, verses 15 and 17 through 17. When they'd finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, well, look, everything. Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these? A couple things, just simple things right there. Simon, son of John. What happened to Peter's nickname? Why is Jesus going back calling him this? So again, he's rewinding the tape. Remember before you had like a ministry? Remember before you had this other destiny and this other name, Simon? Son of John, do you love me more than these? What are these? Some people, I think it's these other disciples that he's fishing with. I don't. That's not where I'm going to land because I don't. Anytime there's a conversation where the guys are talking, who loves Jesus more or who does Jesus love more? Those conversations are not well entertained. There's not a who loves me most, you know, value in. I think in the heart of Jesus. And so here's what I think is happening here. I think they just finished the second biggest catch of their career. It's a fisherman's story. They literally count the fish. There are 153, and they don't just say fish. They're fishermen. They say big fish. There are 153 big, fat fish. And Peter's back fishing. And Jesus is asking them the same question again, right? Do you love me more than fishing? Are you still a fisher of fish? Simon, son of John? What do you love? What are you living for? When God doesn't answer us, I'll say it. When he doesn't serve us the way we think he should, where do we go back? What boat do we go back to? God can be very disappointing because he's in charge and he runs the universe and he doesn't even consult us. And so when we present a set of expectations and prayer requests and we arrange our lives in a certain way and sometimes well-meaning, we think that we're actually serving him and he's not going to the same place we're going. And so we just get left. And there's a time when we have to ask a question there. Are we going to go back to fishing? Because it turns out we're going to be single our whole life, or not as prosperous as we thought, or probably forgotten, most certainly forgotten. We just going to go back to fishing? That's what he did. Well, Jesus needs to, I want you to see that Jesus needs to make this man well. Humpty Dumpty had a great fall, and all of his horses and all of his men can't put him back together. And so Jesus now is going to put him together by making his soul well again. That's what Jesus does. And then he's going to put him back together with him. That's what Jesus does. He's going to make him right with himself, and he's going to make him right with the God of the universe. So Jesus is going to ask Peter three times. Jesus doesn't need to say this three times. Peter needs to hear it three times. And that's why Jesus does it. He does it once for shame. John, verse 15, or he says, and then John 21, 15, and then when he'd finished eating, Jesus says to Simon, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Then feed my lambs. He says it once for guilt. Verse 16, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Well, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Take care of my sheep. I'm going to give you responsibility. He says it once for regret. Because Jesus wants Peter to write two letters on how to endure persecution. I mean, of all people to write it, right? Let's get Peter to do that. So he does it once for regret. A third time he says to him, verse 17, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter now is hurt because Jesus asked him this third time. Sometimes being put together hurts. Do you love me? And the Lord, you know all things, he says, you know that I love you. And he said, feed my sheep. And no rooster cried this time, but angels did. Because Peter has now been put together again. It is well in his soul. He is back. And he's not new. He's kind of pasted and glued together. Like Thomas, like Jesus had to get Thomas right. Now he's getting Peter right. And I want you to read that the restoration is, you know, three questions, but it gets so much better than that because Peter gets this last gift in verses 18 and 19 that must have been like the craziest Christmas one could ever imagine. Look what he says in 18 and 19. So after everything's kind of made well again, he says, I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and you went where you wanted to go. Remember how bold you used to be. And when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you to where they want you to go. And here's what this means. And Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death that Peter would get to have to glorify God. And then he said to him, like he said before, follow me. Why don't we get you back fishing for men? Do you see the gift that Jesus gives Peter this last time? He goes, look, now that you are this egg that has a bunch of cracks and glue and not so symmetrical anymore, and you know how fragile and frail you are, this is what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to let you have that night over again. I'm going to surround you with Roman guards. And they'll ask you, aren't you Simon, son of John? And don't you know Jesus from Nazareth? And you'll get a chance to make this right with you. You'll say, my name is not Simon. He calls me Peter. And yeah, I know him because he first knew me. And if it wouldn't be too inconvenient for you, if you, you know, after you beat me nearly to death, would you please not kill me the same way you killed him? Would you put me upside down on that cross? I promise I'll put on a good show. I'll die an ugly death. But I don't want to die like he died. He was such a great king. He was the one who put me back together again. Jesus told him this so that he would know how he were to die to glorify God. That's a great gift Peter gets. Look, the reason, you know, we're kind of looking at this passage is because there's so many different ways to apply it. And the first way that we need to apply it is to be restored. You. Why did Jesus invade this planet? Because he wanted to invade every life. Right? He did not come to condemn the world. He came to restore it, to put it back together again. The reason I've been working my way through this passage so slowly is so that maybe you might grasp this, that Jesus came for Peter and Jesus came for you. And those decisions that helped you realize that you are nothing more than a jar of clay that gets to hold eternity, that you are not all that tough, that you're just a foolish egg person with legs swinging, and hopefully by now you've realized it's a long way down. Not so judgmental anymore, much more forgiving to other people. You know, here's my point today. Are you forgiving to you? This passage is for you. This passage is for you. You're Peter. And if Jesus were here today, he would arrange circumstances to kind of rewind things so that he might call you by an old name that you're known by, that you might smell the same smell that triggers the memories of your ruin and demise, that he would repeat, he would look you right in the eye and rehearse this over and over again until you got it right. Do you love him? Then I want you to do something for me. Do you love him? I want you to take some responsibility. Do you love him? How many times would he have to ask you that? He is not one to be worn down. And he'll ask it as many times as it takes for you to hear it. So be restored. Let John chapter 21, let that beach scene be your story. Because John 21 is his story. It's about a babe in a manger coming and invading people's lives that aren't on the wall, that are under it, and they can't get picked up. The next way to apply this is to restore someone else, help put someone else back together again. Because Jesus isn't here. He said it'd be far better that he left and then he'd leave his spirit behind. And so you and I get to be the voice of Jesus in other people's lives. And so maybe while you were hearing the story of Peter, maybe God was trying to tell you that you need to have this conversation with someone else. Maybe a brother or sister, maybe a family member, you know, maybe an employee or employer, maybe somebody that is needing someone to step into their lives and show them the power of grace. Maybe you're the one that's supposed to set up a charcoal fire for someone and say, look, let's watch this movie again and let's see if we can't change the ending. Because that's why Jesus came. And that's why Jesus left. Is so that his spirit would indwell ours and we would be the voice and the hands and the hugs of Jesus in people's lives. You know, a few years ago when I got kind of sick and lost the compass and didn't know what to do and how to do it, and it was just hard getting out of bed. And because of that, there were consequences around here, and a lot of things did not get done that were supposed to in a timely manner. And the worse it got, the more difficult it became for me to do much about it. And it finally got to a point where, honestly, I don't think I should have been kept on That's what it comes down to. And so I thought, you know what? I'm going to try to start over and see, you know, if I can stay in Austin. And so on Tuesday mornings when we go to our elders have a prayer time, I just went to him and said, everything wrong with this church is my fault. I've just been paralyzed for a number of reasons, and I don't deserve to like be here. And so, if you guys want, I'd be happy for you to walk me out this door. You know, but everywhere you look, there's trouble, and all that trouble is mine. And the guys got up from a table and they came around my chair and they put their hands on me and they started praying and they said, feed our sheep. You know, we get it. It is yours. But we restore you. We're going to put you back together again and we want you to lead. Grace transforms. Is there a campfire out there for you? Do you need to build a campfire for someone else?
For more information about Grace, visit our website at grace360.org.